Welcome back, everyone, to the Anti-Diet Club podcast. We are here again with a terrific guest. And guess what? We are bringing this week our first man to the podcast.
Dun, dun, dun.
Or I should say, correction, cisgendered man to the podcast. We have just had the pleasure of speaking with Johnny Landles. Johnny was a former diet culture obsessed fat loss coach who turned to an intuitive eating approach, an intuitive eating coach, and is very much Haze aligned. He's a Haze advocate. For those of you that are new, health at every size advocate. He spent years fighting his own body and believing that he just needed to be, as we all do, more disciplined, more motivated to maintain that weight loss long term. And a couple of years ago, he started learning about disordered eating and intuitive eating, and slowly over time pivoted his coaching and training business and hasn't looked back since. And he now helps clients break free from food and body obsession and end their constant mental battle with food while using strength training to help them fall in love with exercise again. It was a real joy to speak to Johnny and to get a completely different perspective about all of this stuff than what we normally do.
Yeah, definitely. And he was so transparent. I mean, you know, you spoke to that in the episode that he was just so open about the toxic messaging that he was involved in, and even how recent that has been, that journey and the journey he's been on to understand more about health at every size and become and much more of a Haze-aligned coach and actually drop all that stuff and really you know, own it. And it was just so refreshing and just such a different conversation than we've had today. I mean, we've been going, what, a year and a half, and
haven't ever
really spoken about the struggle for men.
I mean, I don't know how much of our audience identify as male, but even among the people who aren't cisgendered men who listen to our podcast might have a son or a cousin or an uncle or a friend that struggles with this stuff. And I think it's interesting to hear from that kind of like bro culture, gym bro culture perspective as to what they might be up against and how they feel and what they're conditioning and socializing has been. So we talk about patriarchy, we talk about gym culture, we talk a lot about how we're trained as health professionals and what that does to us. It was really fascinating.
Yeah, and I guess when he was talking about the nutrition coaching and health coaching, you could help you understand where he's coming from with that, because you've been through that too.
Yeah.
Just to your point there, I'm just looking at the statistics, and we have 7% of our audience is male.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There we are. Wow.
7%. There we go.
And more, right?
Yeah. We dived into so many different things, though, didn't we? Even business. It was a fascinating episode.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
If any of you listening here are health professionals and have ever worked with a business coach, you might want to listen to some of what we talk about in this.
Yeah, or even if you've just got any kind of business and you are a slave to social media, it's interesting comparisons. But yeah, let's dive on over to the conversation. Welcome to the Anti-Diet Club podcast, Johnny.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. It's great to be here.
We are very excited to have you here, but I do have to share with our listeners that I did put you through a small bit of pressure when we were talking about you coming on the podcast, because we are very, very cautious of who we have on the podcast, because we are very, very defensive for our listeners to make sure that it's absolutely Haze aligned, absolutely anti-diet message. And as you can imagine, we get a lot of people reaching out to us to come on here, but I'm the vetting person. So if anyone ever reaches out, it's me that will go through and decide, because we look for red flags and stuff. But you passed, you're here.
Yeah. And I totally understood why you did that. And a lot of my former content, podcasts, blogs, if someone were to go back, they'd find a lot of that because of the way that I used to work. So I totally understand why you had that vetting process. And it was even something that I started to introduce into my own podcast for that same reason, because I had a guest that seemed to be totally sort of aligned with my message. And then as we were in the episode, it was, oh no, so many red flags. And I don't think I've brought the podcast down yet, but I'm very, like, it's in my to-do list to kind of go through a lot of stuff and edit or delete. So
yeah. You were very kind. You were a very open book. And I knew from that you were hiding nothing. So yeah, that was great. You made it easy. I didn't have to dig too far to realize that actually, no, it's a real deal. You know, this is good. But yeah.
And also, I love what you mentioned there, Johnny, about, you know, all of us start out, whether you're a PT or a nutritionist or a dietitian or a health coach, everybody starts out on the kind of diet mainstream way of doing things, right? The way that everyone is trained, the way that our culture sees health and wellness and fitness. And pretty much everyone has to go through that transition phase of approaching their work differently. And I think from what I've heard about you so far in interviews you've done before, you're quite open about that transition and the fact that you did start out as a, I think I'm right in saying, a fat loss PT, is that right?
Yeah.
And you, well, I'm not going to tell your story. Why don't you tell your story?
Well, long story short, because when I've said that in the past and I listened back to myself, it takes far too long. Long story short, as you said just there, Gillian, everyone's trained that way, aren't they? And I had a particular anti-fat bias growing up as well because of being not even really in a larger body, but a larger body to my peers. Mm-hmm. And so I experienced some weight stigma growing up. My parents were both in larger bodies and my mum was kind of that classic yo-yo dieter who didn't like her body and was constantly trying to change it. And when my dad passed away at the age of 16, I was 16, he obviously wasn't, it kind of reinforced that weight stigma as well, because he was someone who had been larger and nobody mentioned it, but it was sort of reinforced in my head of, oh, this is the kind of consequence of living that way. And that was what, you know, that was what took me towards men's health magazines and really devoting my life to this lifestyle change of saying I'm gonna not be larger. And when I became a fitness professional and a CrossFit coach and started learning about nutrition, it was all geared towards weight loss. And so that's how I worked for a number of years until it was in 2020, so sort of mid-pandemic. I had some mental health issues through the pandemic anyway, as I'm sure so many people did. But one of the reasons for that was my own sort of weight cycling. And my weight cycling had been constant throughout most of my 20s now looking back, but this particular one was from that 2015 starting a nutrition coaching company to 2020. I had weight cycled a lot myself. And I was doing another coaching certification because I wanted to be a better coach. I'd felt I had a lot of knowledge on nutrition and fitness, but not much on the art of coaching.
Yeah.
So I was doing a certification that was built around the art of coaching, and it was in this certification that they mentioned disordered eating. And as I was reading about disordered eating and self-compassion and all of these great things, all of these red flags were going off in my head, right? Of, this is the way that I've been living my life. And it's been touted to me as health and fitness. And that's what started the journey to moving into the practice I have now in mid-2023, to be fully haze-aligned, fully intuitive eating, very much anti-intentional weight loss as a prescription. And that did take that long to kind of get there. I did toe the line between, can you lose fat and honor your relationship with food? Are there ways to do it without tracking calories or doing dieting methods, quote unquote? And for me, it took me this long to get to that stage where I was just very adamant that, no, you can't. I don't believe you can have an intentional fat loss program that honors someone's relationship with food.
Yeah.
I think you can promise someone that you can help them heal their relationship with food and eat in alignment with their body and their needs and their satisfaction, their emotion, and, you know, move in a way that they love and enjoy. And then the chips will fall where they fall. And that's why, you know,
that's where you've come to. I know Tamsin's dying to jump into the tell me more about this straddling the fence thing, because as practitioners,
it's sort of, yeah.
Or do I have that wrong? Do I have that wrong? Is that not what you want to jump in?
No. What I was going to say was, do you feel that you kind of had to go through that phase? It almost has made you kind of almost in a better position now, because you've almost proved it to yourself that intuitive eating can't be used in that way if it's to be done in the right way. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like a rite of passage. You kind of have to go through that in a way.
Yeah. Because even if you looked back to my content when I first, living in this house for me is a kind of big benchmark as well, because there were some big things that shifted in my lifestyle and who I was working with as a coach and things like that as well. And there was a big, not a big period, there was another period of weight gain for me when I moved house. And when I was starting to learn about intuitive eating and stuff like that, I was still trying to maybe use it for intentional fat loss in terms of, as we know, it gets called the hunger and fullness diet, and how that isn't what it is. And I noticed the block with regards to truly making peace with food and truly honoring what your body was telling you. And I also noticed the block with regards to food habituation of certain foods and drinks that I still wasn't allowing myself fully. And so I had to lean into that more. And it was more because, as much as I was reading about intuitive eating and disordered eating and all of the downsides of dieting, I still had an anti-fat bias that PTs have, because up to that point, I hadn't read Health at Every Size. I hadn't read anything to do with weight, not a lot to do with weight stigma. I'd listened to a few podcasts about weight stigma, and I'd listened to a few things about metabolically healthy obesity, which is what a lot of the doctors and things are touting now. And that was as little as I knew about Health at Every Size until I read the book and read the associated research. And then that led me to find Aubrey Gordon's podcast, Maintenance Phase.
Big fans.
Big fan of Maintenance Phase. And I've just read her book, You Just Need to Lose Weight and 19 Other Lies About Fat People.
I'm reading that
one again, actually. Because I think the real flex is not how many books you read, but how many times you read the books that have an influence and really take on their message. And it was reading those books and the literature associated with those books as well before I could really take the stance of Health at Every Size. Because before then, it wasn't mentioned in any of my certifications. It was a small subset of a singular lecture within a big module that said, there's a group of people that believe this, and...
I'm even surprised that it got a mention.
That's what they choose to believe. However, we've got this data that associates these health outcomes with being this size, and thereby it talked about the downsides of the BMI. It didn't go into the extent of which it was cultivated and adjusted as per,
or how much of a piece of shit the BMI is.
Complete shit show it is.
Which I think like every second
post for me now.
The only the best podcast episode has got to be Maintenance Phase for that one, for the BMI. Obviously, and ours, but I just think that one, they really do dive into it and really pull all the pieces together, which is just incredible how they do that and really explain it easily so you can understand it. But it's such a good episode.
Yeah. It is a great. I wanted to jump back, if you don't mind, Johnny, to what you said. What really struck me was when you said during the pandemic, you were kind of going through this struggle yourself in terms of mental health and weight gain. And then you were reading some things and it mentioned disordered eating. And there was just some, it sounds like just alarm bell, just, like the penny was dropping. They're actually talking about my experience. Did you, up until that point, identify as being someone who was a disordered eater?
I'd never even heard of the phrase. And this is someone who had worked with clients for 5 years by this point. And that's what's scary, isn't it? And I have made multiple pieces of content as ways of apologies to former clients, because I didn't see the level of disordered eating and thinking I had, and even behaviors around exercise, and how much all of it was wrapped up inside this fear of gaining fat, this just downright fear of gaining fat. And it wasn't caused by CrossFit per se, but I'm friends with a fat person in the CrossFit space who receives a lot of horrific weight stigma from people in that space, and albeit her gym's very inclusive, there's a lot of chat about if you'd lose weight, you'd be better at this movement, you'd be fitter, you'd be stronger, you clearly overeat because you're fat. There's a lot of that chat, and there was some, I'm a guy, right? And it, within guy circles, there's a lot of banter about being fat, and that was just something that I wanted to squash completely. So for me, when I tracked all my macros and I trained twice a day and I did the amount of steps I did purely because of my work, my lifestyle and my training, and lost weight because of those things, to me, that was me cracking the code. And that's the message I portrayed to my clients, because all I learned about after that was the flexible dieting methodology of tracking macros.
Yeah.
So I was led down the, I'm going to use quotation marks a lot here, the evidence-based movement of flexible dieting. I read a lot from the practitioners in that space because that was everything that I was just geared toward.
Yeah.
Never did I ever learn about disordered eating until this period in 2020. Yeah. When I was just looking at these bullet point lists of compensation and bargaining and severe restriction and routines and rules and fear against any changes of those routines and rules and
guilt and shame.
Guilt and shame. Oh, my self-compassion was through the floor. They made us do the Kristen Neff self-compassion test as part of this self-assessment, and my score was so horrifically low. And I thought, as someone who's quite empathetic to other people, I'd have quite decent self-compassion, but it was the complete opposite. I'm happy to report now my self-compassion has improved because I've done the test again. But I didn't know about any of these things. And that was quite worrying, Gillian, to be someone
Do you know what is? Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I was going to say, right? My question to you was, did you recognize it within yourself? And you said no. But even if you had that blind spot, what you've also said, what I heard was, in your training, at no point were you educated in how to recognize disordered eating in people or compulsive exercise or, you know, disordered relationship with movement. Like and from what I understand, you've trained in both PT and nutrition, right? And health coaching. So like, it's really, really interesting. I mean, me too, right? I also trained in health coaching, nutrition, and a yoga teacher, and at no point in any of those was there here's the red flags if you are working with someone or even as particularly as a health coach, this is your scope, and if you come across anyone who you think might be engaging in eating disorder behaviors, that's out of your scope. You're not qualified to work with someone who's actually struggling with that.
Yeah, and to clarify the kind of points, I didn't know disordered eating was a thing, or those behaviors and mindsets were so much ingrained with that until I did that course. And then that's when I noticed it within myself as a both past and present self at that moment.
Yeah.
With regard to one of my certifications in nutrition, because I've done a couple, there was a huge module on eating disorder, but it was very much a separation from anything else that we'd learned. And so it wasn't there is this subset of behaviors known as disordered eating, and that kind of crosses lines with eating disorder pathology, and eating disorder pathology is only when so many of those things classify into then a diagnosis. There wasn't that kind of crossover. It was just these are eating disorders, and this is nutrition for sports performance and body composition adaptation. And when you look back at it, it's one of those where I was trusting this science communicator who created this course to be the person who had read the breadth of the research to then communicate that to me. And then you look, I'm not going to bash people personally because people have their own experiences. And obviously, as someone who was a CrossFit athlete to a certain not very good standard, but someone who competed in competitions, I had my own disordered eating and behaviors from that. But the person who ran this course was a competitive male bodybuilder. And looking back, I could see biases, I can see disordered behaviors, and the whole scope of the course was, here's how you work out somebody's calories and help them lose weight. Pretty much every module.
Yeah.
So there's no thinking about the actual real person that you've got in front of you. It's just a really kind of black and white kind of, this is what you're going to give to people. And
there was to the extent of, let's think about different people's goals, different people's height and weight, and thereby their different, there was a bit of motivational interviewing, and there was a bit around consultation methods, and there was a bit about whether you should get that person to track or not, but it was all geared still around the goal of fat loss. And even if it was a performance-based goal, it was, here's the module in endurance nutrition, and here's how many, you know, how many calories these people need and how to work that out, and thereby here's how you work with that person. But it was still very much all about fat loss.
It's so entrenched. Diet culture is just so entrenched. And when you're swimming in those waters, it's like, I can really understand how your eyes were just like, and your jaw must have hit the floor when you were like, hang on a minute, I've spent all these years believing and participating in this way of how I understand health, and now actually I'm beginning to question it in terms of recognizing my own experience in this sort of disordered eating criteria. And also I would imagine the cogs start going in terms of, God, how, you know, like, and we've all had this, I'm not just pointing this at you, Johnny, because I've had this too, like, what harm have I caused to my clients, you know? And like I heard you say, go back and sort of make apologies and think, we've all been there. And I think once you know better, you do better, right? And it is quite a sort of awakening that's quite hard to process, I think. And I'm curious, I suppose, now where you're at, how, getting back to this question that I thought Tamsin was going to ask, how did you go from having that personal awakening to being like, oh, okay, I'm going to begin to heal my relationship with food and movement, and I'm going to begin to bring this different paradigm into how I'll work with people. How did they respond to that?
Great question. Yeah. As in, how did my clients respond to that as well? And people I was working with?
All of it. Family, friends, clients, peers.
Yeah. So because this has been a process now for the last 3 years, it's been gradual. And so because there was the starting phase, let's say the first year and a half, I was even looking back at a post I made just before Christmas, actually, when I talked about, do I still work about, you know, talk about weight loss and work with people? And I said, yes, because I understand that's what a lot of people desire, and I can then work with them with more of what they need. And even now I would disagree with that statement. So let's say the first 2 years, there was that shift then into talking more about disordered eating and its dangers and what it looks like, and owning up more about my behaviors. That was the first thing. And that was made easier because there were some high profile male cases coming out about similar things. It was the same time the Freddie Flintoff BBC documentary came out about his history of weight stigma and bulimia. And that gave me a name for it as well with regard to my exercise activities. I could very relate to his story and obsession with exercise. And there was different bits in different media bits about that coming out. So that was where it started. But I was still talking about, how can you change your body composition in a way that honors your relationship with food and not fall into disordered eating behaviors? And that still people kind of got on board with. After I moved house and started embracing intuitive eating more, this was when I actually read into intuitive eating. So this is 2021 now, March, April 2021. Because before then, I was still going through the kind of, let's call them fat loss habits, protein every meal, lots of fruits and vegetables, eating to 80% full, as some certifications call it, rather than actually honoring hunger and fullness. I was doing those things and walking shed loads. I started to embrace intuitive eating, but it still became the, oh, okay, well, this is helping me heal my relationship with foods. That will help me change my body composition, because it was my relationship with food that was the wrong piece. It was the fact I would binge, or the fact that I would over restrict and then binge, or I would overcompensate and then I was oscillating too much. I wasn't really listening to my hunger and I wasn't listening to my fullness. So I thought this will solve it. And people kind of got on board with that. Again, I created a group program because I was in some awful business mentorship, which is a complete other story, because they're toxic for fitness coaches as well in terms of what they tell you to kind of market.
Agreed. I've been on them too.
Terrible. And actually I've got a good analogy between why fit pros fall for them, because it's like disordered marketing and sales match.
It's like diet culture for business mentoring, right?
Exactly. 100%. Yeah. I've got a whole thing on that. So I created a group program that was, again, it was sort of pseudo intuitive eating principles, but for weight loss. It was hunger, fullness, how to gain control of your emotions. And so again, people got on board with that. I didn't really start getting any kickback until I started really talking about health at every size. Shock horror, that's the thing, you're really nailing
your colors to the post at that point, right?
Because I think the world can really kind of get, and this, you know, I kind of touched on one of the questions I was going to talk to you about was about PTs. I have a lot of people reach out to me who like, oh, I just love your message, I'm so anti-diet as well. But actually, when we start having a conversation, it's very clear that what they're saying is, oh, but I still, if somebody comes to me to work with me for that, that's what I still offer it to them if that's what they want. I've got to give the client what they want. And I think that's where it's difficult, in that people will straddle that line because they are fearful of losing business, I guess. I mean, I guess it is about that, which I understand. And it's an easy sell, like, especially this time of year, you know, it's an easy sell, isn't it? And I think that's the issue.
It's hard.
When you come into it as in like actually health at every size, that's when people are like, oh no, let's not accept the fat people. Let's not accept people in larger bodies. They cannot cope with that at all. It's like, hang on, what are you saying? And you really explain health at every size, it blows people's mind. They're just like, oh no, I'm not buying into that.
Yeah. It's like, I'm on board with intuitive eating. I'm on board with healing my relationship with food. I'm on board with improving my body image. All of that sounds great. But when you start talking about, it's actually okay if you're fat, it's actually okay if you're in a bigger body, like that's the crossing point, because that's when we really start to sort of nudge it, poke people at their kind of sensitive points, right? You're finding the edge of where people's bias lies.
When you start to talk about, well, okay, maybe it is okay that people are in bigger bodies and that actually there's not much they can do about it. And there's a lot more in terms of what is, you know, that's privilege. There's like, you know, or like you were saying about having a job where you walk to work every day and you were able to do that, all those things.
Yeah.
People just can't cope with that. And I think in some way, sorry, Julian, I've taken over your thing, but okay. In some ways it's because everything they've built their own identity on and their own foundations on, and you must have felt like this has just evaporated, like in that one thing that you say, and actually they don't want to hear it because it's very difficult for them to accept that, oh, actually this thing that I'm pursuing, I'm either getting it because my body is capable of doing that, I'm capable of being that size or that shape or whatever it is I'm aiming for, or I'm not getting there and I'm not winning and actually I'm wasting my time. Nobody wants to hear either, really.
No. And for me, with regards to the business, as you said, I'd never actually worried about losing clients. It was more just the case that I was just genuinely believing in my values as I moved forwards. And there was, as we talked about toxic marketing, you know, for fit professionals, I started following someone who really helped me out of all of that mindset towards the freedom of creating content that just felt right, matched values, matched what you were learning at the time. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to talk about that then. I'm just going to document what's going on. And I'm going to talk about it in a long form way where I'll say, hey, I used to believe this and now I believe this because I've read this and I've also corroborated this. And it takes a lot for somebody who's worked in the fitness industry for 12 years who used to believe this to such an extent to change their mind that I have good reason to do this. And if this triggers you, that's okay because it's meant to. And if you want to talk about it, I'll gladly have an adult conversation with you as long as you stay civil. Yeah. And I'll also share with you some reading that you probably haven't done because I hadn't done it up until this point. And people have been open to that and talking with clients about it on consultations with people who have come with me on this transition as well. They were talking to me about this intuitive eating thing sounds cool. And I'm saying, yeah, it's really helping me with all of these things I used to really struggle with. And they're saying, wow, I really resonate with a lot of those things. Can we start talking about that more? Mm-hmm. Yeah, fine. There have been other people that have said, I think we're going different ways. And I said, well, if you still believe these things or want to believe these things, then yes, we are. And that's fine. And that's just an adult way of parting ways. But most clients were, oh, right, okay, that gives me a reason as to why I can't stop eating this food, or why I have these behaviors I'm not a fan of, or why I've always felt this. And oh, that also gives me a great reason as to why I'd always reach this plateau and then regain, or why I've reached this plateau now and can't move past it. Because I do have some clients who are with me who have lost weight, but that's because they went from being people who were completely inactive, now they work out 3 times a week. And that does happen for some people, because that's what makes this so individualized. That's what I'm saying to everyone, is that you can't just say, well, that person started doing this and then they lost weight, so you should do that too.
Yeah.
Because somebody else can do those exact things and have a very different response. Yeah. So that's what we're saying. We're saying that the model of personal responsibility is wrong, because there's so much more that goes into this than just what someone puts into their mouth or the steps they take.
How they move. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nobody, it's just a big red flag I always say to any clients, even clients that, you know, if I say to them, even if we don't end up working together on an initial call, it's a red flag. If anybody you speak to says, I know how your body's going to be in 6 months or 12 months. If somebody can categorically tell you how your body is going to respond to a protocol, run away as fast as you can, because nobody knows. But, you know, I want to just bring this back to, as we've been talking here, my brain's been on fire about these connections between diet culture, business ethics. And this is not where I thought
it's going to turn into a very different episode.
So fascinating, because I'm thinking, I've had that same awakening with business, right? I've worked with business mentors that are like, this is what you do. And it's all like the before and after, right? Like I was this person, and then I, you know, underwent my own transformation, and now I'm this. And that's diet culture through and through. And the more I've learned about what I would say feminist business marketing or business strategy, is at the end of the day, it aligns with my anti-diet, hazel-lined values and ethics, because it's person-centered.
Right.
It's person-centered, right? It's about accessibility. It's about recognizing the different systemic, like I'm thinking, for instance, patriarchy, right? Recognizing the different systems at play that influences how we are, you know, conditioned as or socialized as women to believe that our value is in how we look and our weight and how we present in that way. It's really, really similar to business marketing in that there is a patriarchal influence there, and all the even the women business mentors that I've had, it's this very masculine energy of like tricking people. I want to say tricking people, right?
And yeah,
that's like weight loss coaches.
Speaking to the point there, that when you do all those things and it doesn't work, blame yourself.
It's your fault.
Oh no, hang on a minute. You bought that course and you did all those things, but actually, you know, you need this one now. And then you're just literally like this all the time. Mm. And all you want to do is work with people. And I think it's very much like diet culture. Whereas in that
what
way.
Now is, it's like, I'm interested in what your journey is. I'm interested in how you've responded to these things. I'm interested in how you feel, How do you feel? I mean, does any weight loss coach ever ask that? Like, how do you feel about this food you're eating? Do you like it? Does it bring you joy? Like, what happens if there's like, there's no curiosity? It's just like, here's the protocol. If it doesn't work for you, you're doing something wrong.
You're lying to yourself.
Yeah.
That's the one, is that you're lying. And that was in our course. Yeah. That was in our course. They brought up a picture of Dr. House with the line, "Everybody lies." And they said, if things aren't moving, you've got to assume that your client's being non-adherent.
But of course now, I'm guessing, then you can tell me, like, your clients are now able to be fully honest with you. If they are, you know, if they get into a position where they are binging, they can actually talk to you about that because they know that you're not going to shame them, right?
Yeah. And I'm not going to sit there and say, this is what blows my mind on this. And I don't want to harsh other fitness professionals, because I used to be one that had no idea as well. And it wasn't until I did a lot of work on motivational interviewing, and the book Motivational Interviewing with Nutrition and Fitness is actually a great one. And they talk a lot about intuitive eating and haze within the book around their, because they say you're not supposed to prescribe, and they talk about them, that being the author's values, which is great. Yeah. And they, motivational interviewing is that coaching relationship where you listen, ask open-ended questions, reflect, empathize, and you help guide the client toward positive change, and you don't prescribe. And in the past it was, oh well, you've binged on the weekend, so clearly it was because you had too many high calorie foods, here's a list of lower calorie alternatives for you to have. Or it was just, that was what we were like taught to do. And I was on a call with other fitness professionals where a woman was talking about behavior change principles and motivational interviewing, and talking about these concepts of listening and not just providing blanket advice that was unsolicited.
Being the expert.
Yeah. And it was blowing their minds. They all had this interpretation, if a client wasn't checking in or they weren't getting results, it was because they had a victim mentality or they weren't doing it right. And it's a shame, because they're not bad people. It's just they're badly taught.
Yeah. Don't know what the blind spots are, right? Or even if they do, just not willing to lean into that sort of, as we talk about in this podcast, not willing to look at and try to dismantle what your biases are, because it, you'll know this, Johnny, it's uncomfortable work when it's you start to realize, oh, actually, I can look at somebody, and if they're in a bigger body, these are the assumptions I'm making.
Yeah.
And you don't, it's not a process of finding out like nice parts about yourself.
No.
It's pretty ugly at times, but it's really necessary if we want to work with people in a person-centered, compassionate way.
Yeah. And as you said, going back to your point, I don't have clients that don't check in now, and it's a much lovelier process all around, because the focus is on their alignment with their behaviors to their body and their values, and the questions of my check-in are very different, and it's very much a process of evaluating things on a subjective scale. And when we have our consultations, it's much more me asking open-ended questions and reflecting and summarizing and change talk, and it's about their relationship with food and their body, not how much weight did they lose that week and why was it
so they no longer have to skip it if they think that they've had a quote unquote bad week. And I want, that brings me round to my next question, right? Because I really want to talk about how things are different for men. I actually just wanted to fire into that, because I'm just worried that we might not.
I'm like, we've got to ask that question.
I want to know how it's different for men, because I was a serial dieter for like 20 years. First started off in like slimming clubs. So at 17, my mum sent me along to Slimming World, and there it continued, and just in and out of these clubs, whether it was Weight Watchers or Slimming World, again and again and again. But I'm thinking back to my days in Slimming World, and my brain's mentally going around the room, and I'm thinking, I can only picture the odd chap that was there, guy that was there, that was, his wife was there and she'd brought him along, and you know, the weeks would go by and she'd just get really, really annoyed that he had lost more weight than her, and then he'd disappear. But that was my only experience of seeing men in slimming clubs. And I just wondered, you know, are men dieting differently? What's the difference? Like, what are people, you know, are they, they're obviously suffering from diet culture, but they must be, there must, it must be in a different way. Is it?
Or yeah, it is. It is a very different way. No, it is a very different way. And I noticed that a lot more as I speak to more and more men. And then I also reframe back to my experiences. Because if you said to me, have you ever been to Slimming World? My answer would be no. If you said, have you ever done Weight Watchers? My answer would be no. The only time I ate Weight Watchers meals was when my mum was on Weight Watchers. The only time I did the Special K diet was when my mum was doing the Special K diet.
Oh, the Special K.
Like, classic. Jesus Christ, we ever thought that two bowls of cereal was enough food for someone? It's just beyond me. But for me and for men, because for men who are cisgender straight men, it's the idea of getting lean, jacked and shredded. That is diet culture, but we don't see it as a diet. You wouldn't see men really talking about yo-yo dieting. Mm-hmm. You'd see men talking about doing science-based, evidence-based protocols, talking about intermittent fasting and, you know, jacking up their testosterone and their libido and their energy and torching fat and getting rock hard pecs and abs. That's the chat for guys. And so for me, I didn't do Weight Watchers, but I counted calories. It's
the same thing. It's just
Spider-Man pointing at each other.
It's the bro version, right?
Yeah. It's that. Can you show me the difference of these two pictures? And it's the same picture. But that's the chat that we go through. And so for me, after I didn't count calories anymore, I lost weight through intermittent fasting. I lost weight through excessive movement and low calorie meals or volume eating, or with my annual subscription to Halo Top ice cream. I'm pretty sure I kept them afloat for several years.
Oh my gosh.
But never,
and
that never satisfied
fasting
anything.
Is just like a posh way of saying not eating and going hungry.
Yeah.
Right?
But it's specific because of the
time restricted eating.
Because of science.
And that's men.
I'm laughing, but I've done intermittent fasting many times.
Yeah, me too. I think I lasted a week. So you're saying men don't talk about yo-yo dieting because they probably aren't talking about the fact that what they're doing is dieting in the first place. So what was your mindset so let's say you went through one of these science protocols and lost weight and you were quote-unquote shredded and then you put weight back on, what was the because I know for me and for a lot of women I work with, it's like, oh, I just couldn't do it, I fell off the wagon, I was really bad, you know, all that kind of chat. What was going through your mind? What do you understand from your clients?
Yeah, so I've chatted about this a lot in my content about my lack of self-compassion. And this is very common with men, which is why there's such a chat around men's mental health, because of the lack of emotional intelligence that we innately have and not innately have, that we're bred with almost, with the men don't cry, toughen up, man up, the banter you're in with social circles, particularly sporty social circles. For me, cricket, rugby, CrossFit, I've always been involved in physical exercise, and within that there are circles of men that have a lot of banter, and that leads to a massive lack of self-compassion, because if you put weight back on, it's because you're a lazy fat twat. So it's not that I was bad and I couldn't do it anymore. It's, oh well, you stopped fasting and you stopped moving, haven't you, fat twat?
Lazy bastard.
You've fallen into the chunky buttons again, haven't you, you little biggie? And then you feel it's the same thing but worded differently and personal responsibility, but you laugh it off and you then agree with them. I just drank too many pints again, haven't I, lads, you know?
And
that's how it is with lads.
And I suppose, how, you know, do you use, because obviously when we're using social media to reach out to people to get them to maybe think a different way or to try and communicate our message, we will be talking to the woman, the person that we were in our heads, that the language that we use. So do you have to feel that you know, when you're obviously working, I mean, do you work with men mostly still? Is that so I'm just thinking in terms of your socials, do you reach them with that language and talking about the things that they are maybe missing out on? Like, how do you connect with them to get them? Because you can't go in and say, oh, you know, diet culture, they might not even recognize it. Like you said, they might not recognize diet culture or disordered eating or any of that. It's just what they would say as health.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that's been a bit of a, so I do work with men and it's about 50-50 now in terms of clientele. And there's been a few most recently, like the most recent people that have come in have been talking about how they recognize, when I talk about disordered eating, they recognize the patterns, and that was a light bulb moment for them to look into. Mm-hmm. With a lot of men, the issue is understanding there is any problem per se with those behaviors, because as you mentioned there with regards to Slimming World and how a guy would turn up and just lose more weight than his wife and then just would disappear again, with guys, and it's not all men, but with men, the personal responsibility piece of weight loss is there much more, because I think whenever a guy says, right, I'm going to get on it, they'll do something really restrictive and strict, like 75 hard or intermittent fasting, or they'll just say, yeah, I'm just going to drink coffee all day and then I'll have one big meal. And because they do something really strict,
really extreme, drastic, yeah,
and they'll don't go to drastic all or nothing methods with exercise, they'll lose a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And then they'll put it back on again when they can't maintain. But that reinforces the personal responsibility that it is their fault, that they're just not eating less and moving more.
Yeah.
So with lads, the biggest kickback I've had with men is just the still innate anti-fat bias, or the fact that they don't want to have a dad bod, or they don't want to be in a place where they are still like bullied and joked about from their mates. And that's when I get through to men more, where I talk a lot more about my weight stigma as a child. And I don't get that as much now, but I would still get it if I was in different social circles. I only not get it now because I've chatted with my close friends and family about the way that that made me feel and the behaviors that they innately brought out of me that I don't want to engage in anymore.
And so
I don't talk about it enough in my content. I'm still probably too much talking about diets, yo-yo dieting, and which is why I do work with women too. You just gave me a good point though, Tamsin, because my brother and I are very close in age, and we're very close as well, and we're quite opposite in terms of, we were opposite anyway growing up in terms of our emotions. I was always quite emotional, and we joked, I don't know if you both know the sitcom Scrubs, but in Scrubs, the character played by Zach Braff, JD, is quite a sensitive guy, and they lean on that, don't they, and kind of take the mickey a bit, and they call him a sensi.
Yeah.
And my brother jokes about how that's me, and I laugh at it because there's nothing wrong. I don't see it as it's said with love from my brother, but I've just thought I can lean on that, I think, a bit more in my content, and I'd say more emotional men work with me when they resonate with the way that emotional eating and things make them feel, you know, how they make them feel.
I can understand that, right? Because I'm going to be truthfully honest with you here. When Tamsin said to me, I found a man to be on our podcast.
I was literally in your flat. I was right there.
She was in my flat, and I was like, honestly, my reaction was, oh my God, because, right, I'm going to come back to why I think we, particularly as women, trans people, non-binary people, basically anybody who is not a white, cisgendered, non-disabled young man, right? Which I'm guessing, I don't know everything about you, Johnny, but I'm guessing you are representative of that, right? When you think about the social hierarchy and how patriarchy works, you're kind of at the top of the hierarchy, right?
Yeah.
So therefore, I think it's somewhat easier for any sort of marginalized identity, so women, trans folks, non-binary folks, to kind of start to, we can start to look at how the world is set up and structured and our social conditioning and why essentially we are, I want to say, the victim of oppression in many ways, right? I would imagine that's a much harder thing when you're a cis man to speak to another cis man about, and actually like, okay, so we might be representative of the sort of peak of that hierarchy, but we are also still affected negatively by patriarchy at the same time, right? Mm. Not to the degree, I would argue, that women are, certainly at least historically, but now patriarchy doesn't work for anyone. It doesn't work for cis men either, right? Because as you say, there's this identity that's really, really hard to live up to, that's been created for you. But I would imagine, like, it's hard enough, I think, to get women to really try and understand, oh, okay, right, beauty ideal, where did those come from? Why do we feel the way that we do? But to get another cis man to speak about that, I would imagine it's quite difficult. So I can see why it is the more kind of like, as you call them, sensitive guys, or guys that are more in touch with their emotions, that would be willing to like open up about that struggle, really.
Yeah, it is. And it's as you said there about kind of, you mentioned masculine energy that a female business mentor would provide you, and that was definitely part of the personality profiling part of one of the nutrition certifications that we did, when they talked about the different personality profiles and the energy, and thereby the language and even nutritional methods that you might use with those people. Mm-hmm. And how a lot of, it was the DISC profile that we were looking at, and how more men would be in the D, which was the just tell me what to do and I'll go do it, and relating to all of those things. And it was so funny how pretty much all of my men, to the point of me being a macro coach, had fit that ideal. Mm-hmm. And now, as I've transitioned into this work, the men that I work with now are more similar to me, which is in the like I personality. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm saying that men who aren't emotional are wrong in any way, shape or form. I'm just saying that the language I use doesn't really speak to them as much.
Yeah.
And it comes back to the anti-fat bias that all men have, and all, well, everybody has, but men in particular, because of the social circles they grow up in. If you're fat in a social circle of lads, like you are, you know, you're there for
the take in
terms of weight stigma.
Yeah.
Because it's the easy picking. Yeah. And if you're the fat kid who then takes a mick out of someone's nose or height or anything you can grab onto, you're the one that's out of line. Yeah. It's toxic, really.
Yeah.
And I speak about it now, and I've triggered a few people who I know quite closely, and they've only spoken out because they know me so well. But it just speaks to the amount of anti-fat bias that is within men. And it usually comes down to some form of either weight stigma they were a part of, either as the person saying it or the person experiencing it, or some form of lifestyle related condition in the family that has then perpetuated them. And they've then gone into a life of fitness as it did me. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've spoken about, to say that really hammered home for me, which is why I created a life in fitness.
Yeah.
Because a particular bloke even said to me, he said, you can't tell me that someone in a larger body on the cover of Women's Health is a good idea. And I said, but if that person in the larger body is because they're exercising and engaging in these healthy behaviors, then why couldn't they be on the cover of Women's Health to say that people in larger bodies exercise too?
Yeah.
And it was that brought him round. And I said, I can understand it's triggering for you to have these personal lifestyle diseases in the family, because that's exactly what happened with me as well.
I think there's an assumption there as well that, well, two assumptions really. One, that people are born with health, and that, you know, there's like you know, and that's not true. And also that health is some sort of obligation, because
both of those,
you know,
things. Yeah, I wanted to bring those up as I brought that up too.
Because
what we talk about all the time, isn't it? You know, most people want to pursue a healthy lifestyle. Most people want to do the best they can for their health. But we do have to, you know, always caveat that with, that isn't the, that doesn't make you a better person, you know, owe anybody health. And some people just, again, aren't given it. And I guess that's what that guy was sort of being triggered by. That's what it sounded like to me.
It was, yeah, because it was that big post that I wrote about. I wrote a big post about glorifying obesity myth, and that if we tell people who are fat that they are healthy, will they just stop trying? And I said, that's just the most ridiculous statement ever. And it's also we can go back to disordered marketing and disordered eating until the cows come home. It's that external reward, isn't it, of the lower weight or the bigger bank balance, which is the poisonous way to get people to do things that are against their values. Rather than saying you can eat and move in a way that you enjoy and be healthy, and thereby they're not going to stop trying. They're going to actually relieve all of this pressure and stigma that they've just been doing it wrong their entire life and haven't found the right coach to invest in or the right program to do. And that's that's the toxic thing of it, isn't it? It's like, oh, well, you were in too much of a calorie deficit, and oh, well, you didn't do a reverse diet, and that's why you put the weight back on.
It's so interesting, though, you know, there's people saying that, and then yet it seems, you know, from what you were saying, that people in larger bodies are not accepted in places like CrossFit and, like, you know, all these things. It's like, well, which way
win.
Do you,
you can't win.
You
can
literally, you can't have it both ways.
And also what I would say here in amongst all of that is we're using the word health, right? But firstly, what is health? Because most of the time when people talk about health, they talk about slimness, or in the case, and they talk about being ripped. Right. Yeah. So, like, when we talk about health, we really need to think, as you say, Tamsin, not everybody is born with the privilege of health. It's not you're born with it, and then it's up to you, depending on your choices, to keep, like, keep or lose it. That's not how it works at all. I want to just finish up, Johnny, by asking you, how have you fared in terms of any pushback from peers, other people in the fitness community, the CrossFit community? How has that been difficult, or what's the response been there?
So I've been quite fortunate, actually, that in terms of Instagram, there hasn't been too much kickback. I think people will just unfollow if they get triggered, and that's fine. I've had a few people comment things where, and bless them, it's the younger fitness professionals who are doing that thing where you know, comment on other people's posts to try and improve your own engagement, which we've all done. And someone did that with a very anti-fat bias remark about, you know, help people eat better to solve the obesity epidemic or whatever, and a few other bits. And I commented back to tell them where they'd kind of gone wrong. And they commented back to say, oh, I meant no harm, but can you please tell me where I've misunderstood things? And I gave them a list of things to read and said, they opened my eyes, so have fun with those. And I've only got a bit of kickback recently where I commented on my friend's post because someone said, why don't you just try eating properly? And I commented back and said, why don't you try not commenting on people's posts with complete and utter garbage? And we then had a huge comment discussion about everything. And I think
I saw that on your social. Did you post?
I put it on my stories, yeah. Other than that, in terms of my communities, because people trust me and they know how much I devote my time to reading, when I started to make all of these posts and the switch, I think people have reached out to me personally. And they've then wanted to understand why I've started to move that way. I had one comment on Facebook, as I spoke about, from that person who said about the women's health person and how I've triggered them recently with my posts. And I had another one comment on a Facebook post saying, oh, I think metabolically healthy obesity is a lot less rare than you, is a lot more rare than you think. And I just replied saying, well, that relies on us having all of the data on that, for one. And
weight stigma doesn't interfere with medical research as well, right?
No, exactly. And said, I'm comfortable with my stance based on all of the things that I've read. And they just liked my reply, basically.
Yeah.
But they did the same certification I did that was done by the male competitor.
The bodybuilder,
So I can understand, because in my network, I saw someone post the other day saying, hey, look, this new research shows that you can lose weight if you track your calories for only 3 days of the week. So it's really not that big of a deal. And I just thought, well, you're still asking people to track their calories 3 days of the week when you don't do it at all. And this is the issue I have, is that there are these fitness professionals that say, all you need to do is track calories, go into this calorie deficit, we'll get you moving 4 times a week and get your step count up. And then what we'll do is we'll reverse diet you and you'll be able to maintain your weight loss forever. And
reverse then you say to them, diet you. That's hilarious.
We haven't dived into that one, have we?
You'll say to them, well, do you do any of those things? Do you still weigh yourself every day and track your calories every day? And they'll say, no, because I've built better habits. And I just think, well, that's just a complete and utter gaslighting shit show.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't even gotten into the, have any of these fitness professionals ever been fat?
I wrote a post on that.
You know, and have, you know, like, that's the thing. It's thin people teaching thin people how to stay thin. And actually, there's so much genetic privilege.
And simply telling fat people that they just haven't done what they're doing.
Yeah, where there's very little lived experience actually coming into this. Exactly.
I wrote that post and someone commented, again, it's a fitness professional who I have a good relationship with. And she even said, she wrote a really long comment. She was like, I really appreciate your insights. It's really interesting to read. Been watching your journey. And she said, you know, I work with my clients in this way. I understand that my experience of fat loss is different because I was thin, gained weight and then lost weight again. And I said, that's exactly what I brought in the post, is that that's not the same thing as someone who's been fat their whole lives.
Yeah.
And she even said, you know, where does this leave us? Like, what do I do?
Yeah. Speak
to them and read these books and read all of these things. And I said to her, it's, you know, funny, I thought more where that came from, if you're interested in it more and more.
That's the best thing, isn't it? Just opening that door.
It is. I just said it reiterates the fear of fitness professionals thinking their only method to help people is helping them lose fat, because someone else commented saying it was another fitness professional who did that same course. This is great. I better get off to the job center. And I said, no, because you work in a gym. So help people help provide a weight inclusive gym and help provide a place where people can go and feel safe to go and move their bodies, and help give them exercise programs that make them stronger and more resilient. Yeah. But that increase their bone density, you know.
But that really speaks to the idea that this person believes the only reason people are interested in working out is to manipulate their body. Right.
Exactly.
And, like, come on, you know.
They need to start with sizing piece of towels. Tired of having to take my own towel when I pay that much for a gym.
Johnny, we've run massively over, but we've really enjoyed speaking to you. And I think what's really has landed with me during this conversation is, I think I just really appreciate your transparency of your honest kind of journey and what that's looked like for you, and that you've kind of not gone away and kind of like hid in the corner while learning all this stuff and then coming out, positioning yourself as the expert. Like, you've really been honest about your process, and I think that's important. Whether you're a professional or not, we all have a process to go through. Just because we learn something like, oh god, I'm a disordered eater, I didn't know that, or you know, wow, dieting doesn't work, just because that lands intellectually, it is such a long process to like shed all that old learning and education as a health professional as well. So I know a lot of other health practitioners listen to this podcast, so even if they're still quite entrenched in a diet culture paradigm, this might encourage them to be honest about their learnings and thanks for that.
Thank you for having me on.
It's been really great. So where can people find you and where can they work with you?
So Instagram is the best place for all of my content, because I'm very unfiltered there and post several times a day, because I just got rid of all the rules that I had around my content and just thought, I'm just going to share when inspiration strikes, rather than trying to have a perfectly curated Instagram grid. Because again, that just spoke to so much of that diet culture bullshit that we talked about, right? Of censoring yourself and filtering yourself. So Instagram is just my name, which I'm sure you guys will have typed out for people so they don't have to try and spell my last name, which is my new wife's bane of her life now. And I do have a free guide that's called Breaking Free from Food and Body Obsession, which is just a 40-page guide talking about that journey I've been through from diet culture to now, and helping people navigate that same journey to here's why you used to think this, here's how you can break free of it, and here's a kind of step-by-step guide to doing that same thing.
Brilliant. We'll put all those links in the show notes. It's been brilliant. Thank you so much. It's been really good. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Johnny. Take care. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.